Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen. Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast. Much like game one, disappointing. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend and new head of technology at the Airport Lounge, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, Vaughn?
How's it going? Well, until 1903 of the third period last night, I was basking in the afterglow of the annual Maple Leaf meltdown and enjoying the return of the Jets for the most part. And just when I thought the level of disappointment the Maple Leafs delivered to their fans was at an insurmountable high, Mark Scheifele and the Jets pulled out an incredible hold my beer moment.
Yeah, that's about as memeable as it gets. That was quite something. I was reeling to a certain degree from the sort of state of play, and then that last little bit, and we'll get into it here, was a debacle. It was just a straight out debacle. But I did want to poke fun at myself a little bit. We actually recorded yesterday prior to game one, and that's why Vaughn's the new head of technology for this podcast. It only taped my voice, which is probably the least important of the two voices. So we're back after game one, probably in a much more somber mood than we were the last time we taped.
Very true. And I will say that I will agree that we had some technical difficulties in that you're actually the technical one and I'm difficult. We thought we would re-record straight after the game last night, and,
right,
and Mike reached out to me, and I just, two words, I said, no way. I was emotionally melting down, and it wasn't fun. It wasn't fun to watch, as you so thoughtfully put previously, Mike, that this whole podcast thing is a bit of a love letter to the Winnipeg Jets, and there wasn't a lot of positive vibes in the air after what transpired, not only leading up to the Scheifele hit, but before that as well. So, and you and I, it's fun to be on the same page with someone. We put out a little bit, and it sounds super weird to refer to it like this. We put out a little statement on our Twitter page, kind of that encapsulates how we feel about the play. I think it is a good reflection of a rational view and not an emotional view. I was quite emotional and defending Mark Scheifele immediately after. And I do think that, you know, once you're able to calm down and look through rational, non-emotional lens, that you can see the play quite differently. And I do think that, so if you are interested in what we think, obviously we're going to talk about it. We're not going to read out our statement. So check out our Twitter page if you want to see specifically what we referred to. But I don't think we could move forward with the podcast, or at least this podcast, without discussing the hit. Mike, what was your initial view, and then did it evolve, or were your initial reactions sort of validated by what you subsequently saw in replays and whatever else you saw?
Yeah, like, and this is in by no means in an effort to sound self-serving, but as soon as the hit occurred, there's a violence through which, you know, again, you and I have both been watching hockey a long time. We played amateur hockey for a long time. The violence through which that hit connected, I saw the back check, and I was like, I wonder if anybody's going to catch Evans. And then as soon as the hit happened, I was like, oh, nope, that's terrible. And then, you know, the scrum ensues, and we'll talk about Ehlers' role in it probably here in a bit, but it immediately became apparent to me that A, this is probably going to lead to a suspension, and B, this is a hit uncharacteristic of Mark Scheifele, regardless of that, uncalled for, unnecessary, and predatory. And, you know, subsequent to that, we've sort of broken it down. I know a lot of people have Zapruder film style. And, you know, not that anybody cares, but Joe Piscucci was on Twitter defending it, saying that it was he eased up at the end and that it was a clean hit straight on. And I think, and respectfully, I replied to him, but I think that's missing the point. I think that when you skate from one end to the other, I counted 12 full strides. Scheifele was at full speed. He let up for probably a stride and a half, and it was clear that that Evans was in a compromised position. Mm-hmm. Scheifele has been a player, and especially throughout game one, I don't want to pick on him a little, but he hadn't been hitting anyone, and there was no clear attempt to go for the puck. There was no hockey play made, and he just pancaked him, and then looked a bit incredulous afterwards, and the whole thing put a knot in my stomach, and I you know, no place in hockey for something like that.
I'm going to be honest, my immediate and emotional response to seeing the hit was to exclaim it was a clean hit. I was not convinced. I was quite certain, and subsequent sort of like pausing of replays confirmed this, that Scheifele didn't leave his feet, and I wasn't convinced. I thought it was possible, but I wasn't convinced that initial and primary contact was made to the head. I thought that it was tremendously unfortunate, but if there was an injury, it would have occurred when his head hit the ice and not from the hit. That's how I felt in the moment.
Yeah, fair.
I don't think that... And it was only through some... The ability to discuss with others, which was helpful, even though I felt I was probably articulating some wrong ideas... I think what we need to be careful with here, and I know I'm jumping around, is I think there are aspects of the play which you can break down and say, see here, this is okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is right. Okay. But if we put it into a larger context, it was a predatory hit on a prone and player that was not in a defensive position. And yeah, as we state in our statement, that it is up to players to protect themselves at all time. But if a player is vulnerable, that's not license for other players to take advantage of it. And that's what happened here. It's incumbent upon them to, you know, apply a lens through which their actions will be governed, in the sense that I'm not here to erase people from the game,
yeah,
just fair. Because they've momentarily lost their perspective on where they are on the ice. There is that element, and I think that's an overriding element, of what should happen here. So again, I had a very strong emotional response. It was to defend my player, but it was only through, you know, looking for additional information and, you know, trying to extract emotion from what I thought the play was, that I was able to arrive at a place where I don't want that in the game. You know, I don't think how is it strategic? How is it?
No, it's like the opposite of strategic.
It's opposite of strategic. It doesn't serve the game on the macro level, and it didn't like, what was the objective there? He made no play on the puck, as you very correctly mentioned. So his objective was not to stop a goal. It was to inflict damage on the other player. And, yeah, you know, sometimes good people do bad things. And I think that's what happened here. So the next point I'll very quickly make, and I'll turn it back to you, is I very quickly became embroiled in several WhatsApp and text message debates over the specifics of the incident. I had multiple ones going all at the same time. And I have to admit, in a sort of semi-private context, it was helpful to be able to articulate and work through some of these things with people you trust and love. That's very different than social media. And I'm quite glad that I didn't go on social media last night, whether it was on the Airport Lounge account or on my personal account, and say things that I would later feel that were incorrect, that I don't feel at this point. I've been able to arrive at what I think of the incident, and I'm glad I didn't put stupid things out there on social media that could, you know, not that I particularly care, but, you know, it's not the right place to work out, you know, your thoughts on something of this nature.
No, social media is not a place for discourse, or at least intelligent discourse, right? It's for reactionary and opinionated sort of positions that you wish to share with the world. So I was the same way. I mulled it over in my brain and was thinking it over, and I thought, well, I'd kind of like to get in on the action here. I was like, no, you know what? I don't need any of that. Vaughn and I can talk about it tomorrow. It's part of the reason why you want to have a podcast, is to do things like that. And the other part of it is, and I think you touched on it very well, is that I did see a lot of, well, you shouldn't have your head down. They tell you in hockey, always keep your head up. And that to me is, it's antithetical to, I think, what hockey is and what it's trying to be. And it, to me, it's the same. It's kind of tantamount to, if you have your back, or you, if you're facing the boards and you're making a hockey play, you're in a vulnerable position.
Yeah.
It's your responsibility to make sure you've got your head on a swivel. But at the same time, there are certain circumstances in every game where you're going to be compromised. And if it's not frowned upon that players shouldn't take advantage of those compromised positions, well, then the game devolves into something that I don't really care for, right? It's just something that I can't condone, where, you know, he was going to go score a goal, so he had his head down, so you can get up to, you know, 30 miles per hour and, like I said, pancake a person. It's just not, it's not a good or, you know, like you say, strategic hockey play. And again, the aftermath of this, I won't speculate on what the suspension will be.
Yeah.
But I do think, and we mentioned it in the little thing we posted on Twitter, is that I know it won't happen, right? Because again, there's a competitive element to this where you don't want to expose weakness. But I would like to hear Scheifele be, and he doesn't have to be effusive about it, but just be like, I rewatched that. That was bad. Sorry, man.
Yeah.
That's my bad. Let's move on. I apologize. I'll accept whatever the league hands down to me, and let's just turn the page on this. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but again, right now, and emotions are raw, and I'm a fan of Mark Scheifele. I don't want him suspended for any games, but I think for the overall well-being of the game that there should be some discipline here, because that was, like you said, an uncharacteristic and unfortunate, but very blatant violation of whether it's league rules or just hockey ethics.
Yeah, you know, there was no other objective, or it would be hard to convince me, near impossible to convince me, that there was any other objective there and what he was trying to do other than to extract a measure of revenge, you know, and I think that trumps anything else you can say. Well, the contact wasn't with the head. He was trying to extract a measure of revenge.
He was off.
Well, he was gliding. He was trying to extract a measure of revenge. Okay, and I don't think that should be part of the game, and it shouldn't be tolerated, and it shouldn't be accommodated. Now, I very carefully worded what we put out, and I apologize if I didn't make this clear enough to you. I wanted to write something that encapsulated exactly what you said. I think that Mark Scheifele needs to look into the camera and acknowledge what he did was wrong and say he was sorry to the player, to Evans, right?
Yeah.
He shouldn't apologize to the Montreal Canadiens.
Right.
Because I'll tell you what, last week their captain cross-checked a guy in the back of the neck from behind and was only fined $5,000.
Yeah.
Okay. He cross-checked another human being in the back of the neck, and he was incredulous on the ice as to the code or whatever. Okay. You know, not a lot was said about that. Now, I'm not blaming the media. I'm not saying they have a bias. I'm saying, in some way, shape, or form, that's now recognized as a hockey play. Cross-checking someone in the back of the neck. You know, no sense, no need to suspend him because it's, you know, Shea Weber and he doesn't do that. And he has thick forearms and he's a lumberjack. So, you know, that's just part of the game. This is a team that has willfully chosen to employ Corey Perry.
There it is.
How many times and games has he been kicked out of, and how many dirty plays is he known for? Okay. this Brendan Gallagher is not a guy that that I mean, he his
sticks walks a fine line.
He walks a fine line. Yeah. And I'm not placing any of what happened last night on any of those three players, but I will not personally tolerate the hypocrisy of any of those three players. Listen, if Jesperi Kotkaniemi wants to come out and say that was crap that Shifley did, I'll listen to him. Okay. If you know, Yoel Armia or whoever else, you know, wants to come out and say, someone who has a clean track record wants to, but the Montreal organizations do not get to be incredulous on this. Shea Weber does not get to be incredulous on this. You know, Corey Perry should not comment on
this. He should just be quiet.
They should just be quiet because they are, their hands are not clean on this issue. About this incident, I'm not saying, I didn't see anything in the game that would warrant such a response from Shifley. It was a playoff game. There was some pushing and shoving. I don't think particularly that Shifley was targeted in the sense that I felt was the case last year with Calgary. I felt they were going after him particularly and aggressively. I didn't think that was the case. I didn't read the playbook of the Montreal Canadiens last night as let's go after Shifley. I truly didn't. But their hands are not clean, which is why the team name was very specifically left out, because they are not lily white on this at all. What do you think, Mike?
No, 100% agree. And again, I understand from an optics perspective that both the organization and the individual players have to come out and say certain things. But I agree wholeheartedly that most of it from most of the players on the Canadiens is very hypocritical. Because, like you mentioned, Gallagher and Perry especially has made a career. He's a talented hockey player, but he's also a shit disturber and has stepped over that line on numerous occasions. And so I think at the end of the day, I saw some people saying that, was it Edmondson? His comment was basically like, the league will take care of it. And if not, then we're going to make his life difficult.
No,
and then,
Mike, I thought it was stronger. I thought he said, and I apologize if I'm wrong, the league, we're going to take care of it and the league is going to take care of it. Like when that guy comes back into the lineup, we're going to take care of it kind of thing.
I think it's I just looking it at stronger. It. Yeah. I think he was trying to intimate to the league. He basically said like he should be gone for the rest of the series, but if he comes back, then we're going to take care of it. And I think the phrasing was that we're going to make his life very, very difficult regardless. This kind of thing, and then everyone on the Winnipeg side was like, well, see, why don't you suspend him? Because that's an active threat to a player. And, you know, my hope through all of this is that there's an acknowledgement that it was just a bad play, and then we just get on playing hockey. And the biggest thing, obviously, is that Evans is okay and gets back. That, you know, obviously that's the primary concern. But, 100%. Again, it's something that was an unfortunate yes. And at this stage, I'm hoping that reasonable heads prevail.
Yeah, Mike, I'm not going to take issue with what you said. But I think, you know, the term unfortunate, and I'm not trying to be critical here, suggests an accident. This was completely unavoidable. This was, like we said, this wasn't a hockey play. This wasn't two guys going crash along the boards and one of them kind of spilling over and bumping his head. You know, so this was avoidable. Utterly, utterly avoidable, which much more points it in the direction of irredeemable, right? So I just kind of wanted to make that point.
No, again, you're 100% right. Yeah, I didn't mean it in that context, like in terms of that there was, this was just sort of an oopsie. From 30,000 feet, the whole ordeal is unfortunate, but you're absolutely right. There was clear mens rea involved here, and you're absolutely right. This was completely avoidable.
So I don't know how much we're actually going to be able to take this podcast in a funny direction, an enjoyable direction. But I'll try to do a little thing here. So as you know, I like to, you know, mostly when the Jets lose, I like to just get away from the game. And obviously no night was more important this season than last night to do that. So my son and I, who watched the game and you know, was equally as emotional about it as I was, and I had to then go back to him and say, you know, I think Daddy was wrong. So that's twice now in 12 years. So anyways.
Good for you. It's quite the track record.
So we sat down and we watched a Netflix documentary on black holes. Why I chose black holes, I don't know. Perhaps I wanted to learn more about where my feelings about the Jets were going. The irony wasn't lost on me. It was a welcome escape. It reminded me how insignificant our existence is within the universe and how preposterous it is to invest oneself so emotionally in something as trivial as a hockey game. Whoa. So,
and now Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy.
You know, why do I add that? I mean, you know, it's kind of funny, but at the same time, you know, I was really wound up about this. And listen, and this is what this podcast, the Jets need to be fun. Like our love letter to the Jets, our enjoyment of the Jets should be enjoyable. It shouldn't pit citizen against citizen, fan against fan.
Yeah,
you good know, point. Arguing in a vitriolic manner about violence that was perpetrated on the ice. That's not what I listen, Mike. You know, I've been in my fair share of hockey fights. I've been in my fair share of bar fights. Right? I'm not a pacifist. You know, but I tend to try to think rationally about the world. And, you know, generally, less violence is better than more violence. And I didn't find anything fun about last night. So I definitely needed to, you know, turn my head and look at something different. So,
nice.
You know, if we want to turn back to just kind of on that note.
Sure. Speaking of black holes, let's talk about the game.
Let's talk about, yeah. What the hell was that performance?
What the
It was shit, a Lewis. Symphony of clusterfuck. It was a cacophony of incompetence. It was a virtuoso performance of a lack of preparation.
Woof. Way to go with the $10 yeah. words. That's well placed.
And that yeah. was that was intended to be in stark contrast to what I had just said previously. So.
We had, again, on the now, speaking of black holes, in the podcast that's now in a black hole, we had discussed, or I had mentioned earlier, that I was worried and wondered if there was some empirical numbers or an empirical breakdown of what team success rates are after long layoffs in between series, like we had. And I had a real fear that this was going to happen, because throughout the season, when we had layoffs, albeit not this long, but, you know, more than two days, we came out flat, and man, did we come out flat. Like it's like everyone was eating potato pancakes for 8 days. I didn't understand. And again, as deserving as Maurice was in our last podcast of praise, yeah. I think this, you can disagree with me and I'd be happy to discuss it. But to me, this falls on the coach, is that this is 100%. One of the primary aspects of your job is when you have layoffs is to manage the rest and then ramp up before it's game time. And time and again here, it's shown that when we have a bit of rest, we come out flat and then we get steamrolled over and over again. And, it, you know, the first period carried into the second. I thought we were a bit better in the third. But it's just, to me, it's a bit inexcusable that you can come out in a round two playoff game and look that terrible. I understand there's rust and cobwebs, but those cobwebs and rust should be going full speed at all practices leading up. So I don't know what happened, but again, I'm going to lay this at the lap of Maurice.
I completely agree. I felt they looked like they hadn't practiced hard in over a week. They did have a graphic up in the pregame show that identified, I think, the last three teams that had 7+ days layoff before going between series, and all three of those teams lost, and two of them lost in four straight, if I'm remembering correctly. So the evidence wasn't very good, I mean, it's obviously a very small sample size, but it didn't paint a rosy picture for what the Jets might be like in the game. And I think that there are a couple layers here. They're not excuses in any way, shape, or form. But I do think that Listen, they know more in the room than we do. But this whole Paul Stastny being scratched at the last minute, right after, I think the day of or less than 24 hours before, Paul Maurice specifically said, we're in good shape when it comes to injuries. Like, so what happened? Did that throw things off internally a little bit? But that shouldn't have been anything that they weren't able to overcome. And then DeMelo gets hurt 39 seconds into the game. Or 29 seconds into his first shift, or whatever the case may be, and I think that was a huge destabilizing factor. One of the things I had in my notes that we did on the Lost podcast was: were the Jets able or going to keep Morrissey and DeMelo together, and how I felt, and I think we agreed how important that was for the success of the Jets. So you know, if DeMelo goes out, you know, just. You know, obviously Morrissey is playing with somebody else, and Morrissey has been at his best this year when he's been with DeMelo. And when you lose DeMelo, then you know you're down to five defensemen. And let's face it, three of those defensemen are Forbort, Stanley, and Poolman. There's only so much Morrissey and Pionk you can put out there, right? Yeah. And sometimes they're being put out there at the same time. So you know, Stanley got exposed a little bit, but. Back to Paul Maurice, I completely agree. I can completely see how this came up. They thought, oh, you know, Toronto's going to take it. We'll have a couple light days and then we'll get back into it. I don't want to overwork them. And then Montreal wins it to put 3-2. Ah, Toronto's going to take it in the sixth game. All right, we don't have to practice hard today. Toronto's going to take it tonight. And then Montreal wins again. And then all of a sudden it's 6 days you haven't practiced hard. You know, what about this day seven? Well, you know, we haven't practiced hard till now. The rest is doing us good. You know, blah, blah, blah. You know, no sense in practicing hard now. Or you do practice hard once. And it's once. Right?
Yeah.
And I can just see how the evolution of the Toronto-Montreal series could have led or could have given a false impression to the coaching staff that they were going to be starting like the next day, so kind of thing. So we can't practice hard now. We're just gonna, you know, and then before you know it, that series evolves to the point where now you haven't practiced hard in 8 days. And
well,
and
it sure showed.
Absolutely, they didn't have a plan. They looked like when they did practice, they didn't use pucks. I mean, they didn't have their legs. They didn't have their brains. They didn't have their hands. It was, as I said, a virtual performance of a lack of preparation.
Yeah, and two of the earlier goals, it was clear that, you know, not only were we a step behind, or were the Jets a step behind, it was obviously, I'm not saying anything revolutionary here, but there's a hard mental aspect to this. And there was a lot of just standing two guys right beside each other, and then the puck moves somewhere else, and they just sort of turn their bodies, and the expectation being that, well, it's nowhere near me now, I don't have to sort of rotate to cover defensively. Yeah. Like, the Petrie pass was a great one. You shouldn't score goals like that in an NHL playoff game. That's just a terrible defensive breakdown, and it was, I think we had close to 4 to 5 odd man rushes for them in the first two periods. And again, playoff game or not, that just shouldn't happen. So all around, it was just, the legs weren't there. From a mental perspective, we weren't there. And the other part of it is that, to a certain extent, especially when we got our chances, Price is locked in. Yeah. So we can't have large swaths of games where we're not getting any scoring chances, because when we do, there's a really good chance Price is going to stop it. He's in playoff mode. It's impressive that he has this switch, but much better effort is needed. And the fact that we were one goal away and pressing at the end was actually just kind of surprising to me, because I thought, no, the advanced stats and the high danger scoring, I think it was, you know, I think we had one and it was like 7-1. So it we just got outplayed. And I'm going to spin it now where I'm optimistic that this was sort of a one-time thing. What really worries me, though, is that DeMelo, to my mind, has been consistently our top defenseman. And if he's not back, or if he's out for an extended period of time, and Lowry went out for a bit, and Perreault went out for a bit, and I don't know what's going on with Paulie Walnuts. It sounded to me like it was more of an illness, and there was optimism that he might be back. But you start chipping away at our core here, and again, that has me more worried right now than me thinking that they're going to come out with that level of intensity. And then, honestly, Shifley, I think he's probably going to get two games, so we could be shorthanded here for a bit.
Well, I mean, there were some elements of the game that I felt were okay. I do feel that we were able to generate more offense than I thought we would against what is a pretty good tight-checking team with a great goalie. And certainly Price played very well and stopped some grade-A chances. I'm looking at the high-danger chances here, and I think they're 9-2 for Montreal, and that seems... Ugh. I mean, I don't know about that. I thought the Jets had a few more really good chances. Like, just off the top of my head, Lowry's goal was a high-danger scoring chance, and Mason Appleton had a shot right from the slot that Corey Price saved. Like, so are those is that the only two times we got into the high-danger area? I don't know.
Yeah, because I don't think that that Connor's goal, you know, when they map out the rink, essentially, to calculate these, that would be I don't think that would be considered a high-danger chance because it was from the corner. I agree. And
about Connor's goal. I agree.
Some of these, I use, at least myself, I use the natural stat trick does a really good job, and they put these stats up immediately. But I use them more as a guide, right? Because I disagree. I'm the same as you, right? Where I'll review them, and after the game, I think, we had more or less, and here are some examples. Yeah. But I find that they are really indicative of sort of, let's say, quote-unquote, good scoring chances or shot opportunities from areas that could be deemed dangerous. And we definitely had fewer of those than Montreal. And again, I think a number of them on the Montreal side were the result of 2-on-1s, 3-on-1. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like we just had a number of breakdowns where somehow we were getting caught shorthanded coming into our own end.
Well, that goes back to something we talked about before. And the Jets were high pressing, right? And what happens is, you know, you create that void behind you if you're stepping up, and if you're late, it's just you're creating space for them to step up into. And I do think that especially Pionk was pressing a lot and earlier than usual.
Yeah, he was, right?
And I don't think the score, like we needed to be a little bit more patient, and he was stepping up a lot, and that created some 2-on-1s behind. So I thought we started to press for offense a little bit early. It was only, 3-1. I mean, you make the game 3-2, it's a game right down to 19 minutes and 59 seconds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you don't have to panic. And I felt that Pionk was a little too, eager to jump up and try to create turnovers when it wasn't quite required yet. And so I do think that accounts for some of the top chances that Montreal got. But what I did like was that we scored three goals. Carey Price had to make some incredible saves.
That's
without
true.
Question. Yep. And we did. I think the worst case scenario was if Carey Price, other than our best forward trying to kill someone, that's not a good scenario.
There it is.
Back to rationality here. One of the worst case scenarios would have been if Carey Price had shut us out, right? Or if we had just got the one goal on a breakaway. I don't think you're worrying too much that you give up a shorthanded goal on a breakaway and they score. You're like, okay, that's an anomaly. That's not something that's sustainable over time.
Yeah.
But the fact that we were able to get three behind them, I think we're good, was good in the sense that, hey, this guy is beatable. He's not unbeatable, right? We just need to get, get our chances. If we clean up our own end... The problem in the game wasn't in the offensive end. The problem in the game was in the neutral zone and the defensive end. And that's where I feel the Jets had no game plan. They were running around willy-nilly. And that was going to be one of the challenges of this series, is that there's no single galvanizing factor like there was in the previous series. The previous series, stop McDavid and androcidal in brackets, right? And Dave Tippett said, well, I'll make it easy for you. I'll put them on the same line. So you can just
thank you
focus
that.
On that. Thank you for that, Dave Tippett. So, but that was super clear, right? Everyone knew that. We predicted it. Paul Maurice even got it, right? But here, what do you do? Like, what is the galvanizing factor? No, we're just going to play our game. Well, how's that going
for Maybe you? Play someone else's game. Yeah, and that was something that from the regular season, the nine games, the forecheck of the Canadians is formidable, right? They've got a lot of speed up front, and they play a good pressing system in the forecheck, and are the weakest part of the Jets game, as we've said many, many times, is our D. And that was, I'm 100% in agreement that we didn't seem to take that into account, where it was like, hey, they're going to come at us hard. They're going to come at us fast. Let's have a defensive scheme in place. Forwards, come back. Let's make short passes. Mm-hmm. Let's, you know, if we have to circle around the other way, let's have a guy rotate to the middle. All those sorts of things. It didn't seem like any of that was in place, where I had thought, you have eight, nine days. Let's come up with a few schemes in order to counterbalance what is, to my mind, one of Montreal's strengths is the forecheck and turnovers in the defensive end. And we just didn't do that at all.
Completely agree. Now, in terms of trying to be positive,
sweet,
and you brought it up earlier, I think it would be remiss if we didn't throw some props. And this has kind of been universally acknowledged online by both sides, is throw some props to Nikolaj Ehlers.
Yes.
For trying to protect, I've forgotten his name, Jake Evans, when he was down. Jake Evans. So Jake Evans is prone on the ice and obviously
not moving.
Not moving, lacking in consciousness. And there's a scrum. Okay, it happens. Well, that scrum would have fallen over and perhaps caused further injury to young Mr. Evans, who apparently it was his birthday yesterday.
Jesus.
Yeah. So Nick Ehlers grabs the boards and basically uses all of his might to keep the scrum away from toppling over onto.
He riot policed it.
He riot policed it. And from what I saw online, notable hockey commentators were saying, hey, this is, you know, there's no defending Scheifele, but hey, here's someone who does care about, you know, his fellow competitor and did everything he could to make sure that further injury didn't befall to Mr. Evans. So kudos to Nikolaj Ehlers. What are your thoughts on that, Mike?
Yeah, full kudos. And I don't think I've told you or Rich or Johnny, we all have collected over the years a number of Jets jerseys, some of our favorites, some of them are not. But since the Antropov debacle...
Hey, Mike, former Winnipeg Jet here, Nick Antropov.
I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I have been reticent and I have avoided altogether getting any player on the back of a jersey. And it's, you know, I'm a scorn lover, right? Is that I did it once and it was on a lost bet that I made with myself. But I've been thinking about this for a while. And this is silly because I'm a grown man, but I'm going to get an Ehlers jersey. Nice. I love this dude. And I have to be fair where it's warranted. I don't think he had a terribly good game in game one. And he was one of the potato pancake guys, but it was something where I love him with the media. It sounds like he's great behind the scenes. He devotes his time. He's good with fans. And that kind of self-awareness is very rare, obviously, because there were 10 or 12 guys on the ice, and he was the only one who had the wherewithal to look at it and go, yeah, guys, can we take this over 3 feet? Because
yeah,
there's
exactly.
a guy dead on the ice here.
I'm not saying don't fight. I'm just do it over there.
Right. Can we please shuffle
it was like when I used to, when it was like when I used to bounce at Monty's.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I didn't, we didn't have to worry about the fights that happened outside of the parking lot. I'm like, guys, if you want to fight, just go across the road. Just go over to the parking lot at Markham Place.
I can totally see you doing that.
Oh, 100% I did that. Just go over to the other side of the road. There's a lot of paperwork. If you guys hurt over here, a lot of paperwork. Over there, I don't have to do any paperwork.
And I can watch.
Yeah. I'm off in 20 minutes. Just You know what, Mike? I think that's really well said, and I'm going to join you on that. I have four jerseys. I have two players and two other ones. I have a Heritage Shifley, a Heritage Line A, which are both kind of, at this moment, carry a bit of a stain. I have an original home jersey that's May 31st, which is the day it was announced. The Jets came back, and a white a visiting jersey, white, that says October 9th, which is the day of the first game back. So I'm looking for the next player to support, and I think you've made a very excellent argument, and I'm going to join you. I'm going to get one of the gray jerseys with Ehlers on the back.
Oh, so, mind meld. That was my thought. Yeah. Look at us.
No.
Coming together on this somewhat somber podcast.
You've inspired me. This is not a mind meld. This is inspiration. I did not have this thought until you brought it up. And then it was the sheer, weight of your argument that convinced me that this is the direction I need to go with my life.
Clock's right once a day, twice a day.
Yeah. So I'm going to join you in that, and my next jersey is going to be Ehlers' jersey as well.
Sweet. Okay, well, let's go to last call.
Hey, guys, just letting you know it's last call. Almost time to wrap it up.
I think for this one, we'll keep it simple. Are the Jets going to win this round? Round two.
Round two. Fight.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, go.
Okay.
Go for it.
When I looked at first predicting the series, I had no idea about Stasny. DeMello hadn't yet been injured, and Shifley hadn't almost killed someone. So I had a very different analysis for our previous podcast. If we play this series under normal circumstances, I say the Jets win, and I say the Jets win in six. But, with what transpired on Black Wednesday, I can't see the Jets winning more than a game or two. I'm going to say Canadians in six. I mean, there is precedent for the Jets to come back and win without Shifley. They won a game against Calgary last year, and I thought that was a really, truly valiant effort after Laine and Shifley went out last year.
Yeah.
But I just don't see – I just think this is one of those things that it's going to be next to impossible to come back from. If we can get Stasny and DeMello back in the lineup, I think there may be enough.
Yeah.
There may be enough just to keep it going until Shifley's back. And then then we might have enough to squeak it out in seven. But that is the absolute best case scenario.
Yeah.
And that's assuming a lot of things swing in the favor of the Jets in the next few days, which I'm not sure is going to be the case. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, and for full disclosure, on the Black Hole podcast, the version of this that we did the other day. And just by the way, I think FanDuel had the over-under at 5.5 as to when I was going to lose to technology as part of this whole endeavor. And so I cleared the over like a champ at episode 12. So I'm going to give myself a pat on the back for that. We both had Jets in six. But it's funny how things can change because I'm the same way. I think that it's probably going to be, if I had to lay money on it, it would be Montreal in six.
Yeah.
We just have too many obstacles here. And we're taping this before the NHL has ruled on anything with Shifley. But it looked like a high ankle sprain for DeMello. And those are, he's done, right? He'll be done for the series if that's what it is. You never know. I shouldn't be so pessimistic. And I think the tone and tenor of this has changed a significant amount. I agree, if the planets align, then I'm not counting us out by any stretch, but our job, or at least this bit, is to make a prediction, and that's my prediction.
Yeah, I was very happy to see the Jets win the first round, but the universe has extracted a heavy toll on us for whatever Faustian deal we've made with the devil to win a round. So unfortunate, but hopefully we can find a way to enjoy the remainder of the series. And, I don't even want to really even speculate that we could win. I'm not even trying to. It just, things are not great right now, and I want to be in a headspace where I can enjoy the hockey that's left.
Yeah, no, I agree. This is a very celestial podcast. Should we call Neil deGrasse Tyson or something? See if he wants to come in do a little drop for us?
Interestingly,
when we sat down, I was like, I didn't think we were going to get cosmic with this, but kudos.
Neil deGrasse Tyson was not part of the black hole. I don't think he's a black hole expert, so he was not featured in the documentary.
Yes, I know. It was the I was trying to pick the most familiar reference in terms of public. Bill Nye is that even more public?
About Stephen Hawking?
Oh.
Duh.
Come for the hockey talk, stay for the famous scientist debate.
Yes.
Well done, us.
So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, on Facebook, even though we don't do anything there, and check us out on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening, and be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets go.
You're going to have to send me that link to the Netflix black hole.
No problem.